I want to start the class today with two proposals, two mishalim. You'll see how this ties into last night. Emitz Hashem. That's a great Emitz Hashem, right? If everything works out as planned. The first we talked about earlier this, in the last couple of weeks, I gave you the illustration of, in other words, is a very, very common phenomenon in the world of learning and the world of ideas. I know, in other words, as a student, I remember the frustration of, in other words, and I know, in other words, as a teacher, and I know the frustration of, in other words, as a teacher. When I was a teenager, I learned Chassidus, I tried. And I had people that I spoke to, not too many, but I was fortunate to have someone to talk to in the duct, right? One of the great misfortunes of our times, the guys who really care and they want to try don't have anybody to talk to. And we spent a lot of time together, probably dozens of hours, maybe hundreds, talking Chassidus. And frequently in the course of our conversations, he would say something and I would say, in other words. And every time I said every word, any time I said in other words, he'd make a funny face, he'd get very, very reticent, very hesitant. He didn't want to say no because it would hurt my feelings, but he didn't want to say yeah because it was wrong. And I would go out of my mind. Here I am, I'm 17, 18 years old, I'm not 52, and I'm trying to understand the word to say this. You told me an idea, I'm repeating it. In other words, what was wrong with saying you're right? Why is every time a funny face? Why is every time, well, not exactly, sort of, more or less? You have the basic point. You know, all the euphemisms for, you know what I'm talking about, but you don't understand. And of course, the answer to the question is because if he wanted to say it in other words, he would have said it in other words. The reason he says it in the words he chooses is because words are a very, very challenging phenomena, right? Words are a very difficult tool. I don't want to bring this up, but I read an article about a person who spent decades working with chimpanzees in the wild. Chimpanzees are animals. They're animals. They're not human beings. And I'm not trying to give any kind of correlation whatsoever. I don't belong to that school. But chimpanzees, at the same time, they're the highest primates. And there's an enormous amount of intelligence of all different types. Very, very sophisticated areas of intelligence. They're political. They're conniving. They're devious. They plan. They do the kinds of things that most animals don't have the ability to do. And they also recall, they remember. So they have this scene where a bunch of old chimpanzees, they're in their 50s, are just sitting together, sitting. And this person is writing, if they could only share what they're thinking. What do old people do in an old age home? They talk. They don't have the ability to talk. They can't use words. So everybody is in their own thoughts. They're not doing nothing. They're not fleas. They're not shrews. They're chimpanzees. So there's a lot of thoughts, but they cannot share them. The Eibishter did not give them this incredible gift that we have, which is the gift of speech. And again, I don't mean to bring this up, but it really is a puzzle to scientists why they can't speak. And the greatest true, of course, also of orangutans. And the answer to the question is because there's a God and he created the world. And one of the most brilliant gifts, if you learn Chassidus, you learn Kabbalah, you find out one of the most sophisticated gifts that God gave man is the gift of speech. In other words, speech is not a technical exercise that has to do with vocal cords and knowing how to move your lips. Speech in Chassidus is called Koyach Hatziruf, the ability to form, to constantly create. Every time you open your mouth and you speak, you're creating new form, new rearrangements of sentences, of thoughts, of words, of images. It's a special, special gift that Eibishter gave us. According to Chassidus, there's four levels of seichel. The second to the highest, is the ability to speak. It's easier to understand human emotion. It's certainly easier to understand the seichel of mechanics, of physical things, than it is to put together words. Now, we do it from the age of two without thinking about it, because the way this gift was given to us, it was given to us in such a way you don't have to think about it, which is why we don't make much of it. But Chassidus says you should know you have a special nefesh. The Targum says, "Vahi adam nefesh chaya l'ruach memalala," a spirit that can speak. Human beings can speak. Animals cannot speak. Period. It's a great gift. But the gift of speech has great problems, great dilemmae. As wonderful a matan as it is, has limitations. What's the limitations? Your words have to carry your thoughts. Your words have to carry your feelings. Your words have to carry your nuance of your nefesh. So of course, you have to agree on the words, right? The person across from you has to have the same language, has to agree that the words mean the same things. Otherwise, you can't communicate. But even once you agree, when you want to express what's called tavna deliba lekasva inchin, nuance, subtlety, words cannot carry it. So a person who's involved in ideas, especially if he's involved in abstract ideas, knows the frustration of words. If we had no words, it would be mamish terrible. But now that we do have words, finding the right words to communicate the thoughts precisely and clearly and in an unconfusing way is an incredible talent, incredible challenge, and it's a great gift. Knowing how to speak, and that the other person should understand what you're saying, and I don't mean speech as an entertainer. I mean speech as a communicator of abstract thought, is a very special gift that few people have. You have to develop it, because you're limited by words. Words are, in Chassidus language, daimimim. They're like rocks. They have no life. The whole life of words is in the person using them. And there's only a certain degree to which the words are going to carry thoughts. So when you say something that's more than good morning, you say something meaningful, you say something sophisticated, you say something subtle, you say something nuanced, your words are carrying ideas that the words are not powerful enough to carry. So there is what they call in English innuendo. There is suggestion. There is subtlety. You say something in a certain way, and you're really leading the person to a certain direction, because the words don't say everything you're thinking. The words are leading that person towards figuring out by himself what you're thinking. Because the words are a symptom, words are a containment, words are a gvul between the mind of one human being and the mind of another human being. So you're using words to get your thoughts across from yourself to him, which is great. But your words can't completely give that across. So they give it across in a way that, you know, with Lashon HaMishneh, Chochmah Umeiva Midaita, you have to figure it out. And in other words, kills that. Anytime a teacher, who's a real teacher, who's teaching you true ideas, shares a thought with you, and you give it back to him in other words, what you're doing is you're taking away everything that the teacher means to say that's not explicit in his words, which is why you're repeating it in other words. I described it to you at length in the last time I discussed this. You hear your teacher say a dvarteira, a thought, and you know he's smart, and you also know he's lucid, you know he's clear, he's not one of those people who's all over the place. But in his words, there's something that makes you very nervous. Somehow you're listening to him talk, you know he's prepared himself, you know he's organized, you know he's concise, and yet part of what he's saying bothers you. You know why it bothers you? Because you don't understand it, that's why it's bothering you. It bothers you because he's choosing his words very carefully, because he wants to be meramez. He wants to suggest, he wants to lead you on to get to a certain level of edelkeit that words don't carry. So you hear that in his words. You don't understand it. And the worst thing a student, the worst place a student can be is in a place of uncertainty. So you listen to him talk. So the simple meaning of his words, you understand. The innuendo, the nuance, the suggestion, you see. You subconsciously sense that he's trying to say something. Since you don't know what he's saying, you kill it. You file it out like you file off the rough edges on a rock or a piece of metal so it should be smooth. It makes it comfortable for you. What are you doing? You're stealing from the teacher the whole power of suggestion. The whole hidden layer of what he's trying to communicate that you have to come to by yourself has been filed away because it's easy for you. So here you are, you're a 17-year-old bochur, and you sit with a maimer and you break, you really want to understand, and you work day after day after day, and you have a shir, and you have a conversation, and you talk it over with your mashpia, and you really think you understand it. The mashpia tells you what it means, and you say, in other words, and he doesn't have the menschlichkeit and the kindness to say, that was brilliant. And instead he says, well, more or less. Not exactly. It's not perfect. And you feel so insulted. My reaction was that the person I was talking to was such a big balgaiva, he wouldn't suffer that somebody else could say an intelligent thing. But it wasn't the case. In other words, takes away the nuance, the innuendo. This is the limitation of words. The mile of words is extraordinary. But the limitation of words is that words are carrying edelkeit. And there's a certain level, a certain aspect of that edelkeit which is not explicit. The words aren't carrying it directly. It's implicit. It's hinted to. And if you leave those words alone, tomorrow, next week, next month, you'll come to, oh, that's why he said it this way. Because he's alluding to this idea, and alluding to that idea, and alluding to the third idea, and it comes together. But he can't tell it to you all at once. He'll completely flood you out. So there is the disease, there is the dilemma of, in other words, that somebody tells you something, and they choose their words very carefully. Because the words that they're choosing are representing an idea that's not fully exposed, not fully available in the words on the surface. They're hinted, they're beremes. And when you're in other words, then you kill that beremes. If you leave it alone, you can come to it tomorrow. But that's very difficult to do as an intellectual, as a student of knowledge who's 17 or 18. You're very smart, but you don't have the discipline, you don't have the background, you don't have the knowledge, you don't have the confidence, really, more than anything else, to say, okay, I'll get it tomorrow. So you file it off, and you take away the possibility of the teacher having leading you on to something more. This is my first mushal, my first metaphor. Okay, in other words, okay, we're going to call it the dilemma of in other words. Now I'm going to give you a second one. I don't know if I shared this this year yet. I may have, but I'm repeating it. Tzeze. Knowledge and learning is a process. And any person who's a real student of knowledge, and the Chlal people today, especially in America, are not intellectual. I once saw, Dinstein, I was talking to an American audience, and he says, Dinstein is one of those people who doesn't know what the word gloves is. He says, you Americans, you hate intellectuals. You find the intellectual, the first thing you do is you ruin them. You can't stand intellectual. He doesn't have that much respect for America. And he says it to America blunt, straight, without any hesitation or reservation. If you're Adin Steinsaltz, you can get away with a lot of things. In any case, I have a friend of mine who told me that the Federation brought Adin Steinsaltz to speak in the city where he's a shliach. So the topic was Chad Gadya. So he gets up to speak. This is his opening remark. The Federation. Who's the Federation? It's the establishment. He gets what it says. Chad Gadya is a very popular prayer. It's been said for hundreds of years. It's so popular that even the Reforms say it in the Haggadah. They haven't taken out the Haggadah yet. So every single Reform rabbi in town gets up and walks out. He insulted him. This is Adin Steinsaltz. But okay. But if you're a student of knowledge, you belong in a certain grade, right? Advancement is important. Pushing yourself. Developing the mind is very important. But there's depth. It's not just collecting information. You know, one of the greatest diseases that happens to people when they turn a certain age is when you're supposed to evolve from memorization to comprehension. If you're very smart, you can memorize what you're supposed to comprehend. And all of a sudden, you find yourself out in the snow. When you go from the fourth grade to the fifth grade to the sixth grade, really, you start learning Gemara. You now have to start to reason. But it's a different part of the brain. The analytical part of the brain is very different than the part of the brain that just understands things and puts them away. So if you're not smart, you just don't understand the Gemara, so you struggle with it. But if you're really bright, you do to the Gemara the same thing you do to the Chumash and to the Mishnah. You put it to memory. And when you get to the 8th grade, to the 7th grade, you just run out of brain power. Your memory is not strong enough to hold on to the whole Shachar Torah to understand the Tosfos. And you're stuck because you wasted 2 years putting stuff in the memory part of the brain rather than in the analytical part of the brain. There's a very... Learning how to learn is one of the most difficult things in life. A few people learn it, and they're very gifted. They're very fortunate, you know. Being an intellectual is like playing an instrument. You can always go into your brain. It's a gift, but it's a process. So you have two people, doesn't matter what age. Let's say they're bochum of 20 years old. They've learned in yeshiva, and they can't learn it. And there's a koil where you have big lomdim, who are 35 years old, who sit with the Rosh HaKoyel, who is a Goen, and they're learning, whatever it is they're learning, it doesn't really matter what, and they have Shiurim on a regular basis, they're at a very high level. And they walk in, why not? Well, you can, well, I learned in Holy Teda. I learned in Chedavay Teda, pardon me. I'm 20 years old, I can Lenin. So you walk into a class where the level of the conversation, the speed of the conversation, and really the depth of the logic is beyond them. Two of these people, this is a hypothetical scenario, two people walk into a room that they have no business being in intellectually. And they sit and they listen. Neither of them is in a position to understand. Neither of them is in a position. They're not schooled. They haven't worked enough years. They haven't developed their mind enough. They haven't sat on enough benches to refine their mind and to collect information and to process information and to organize information to be able to understand things at such an abstract level. But they're intelligent enough to know that what's going on in this room is intelligent. It's above their head. And these two bachrim, these 22-year-old bachrim, who are sitting in a room full of lamdim, who are time and a half their age, talking Torah on a level which is beyond them, have very different reactions. One of them is very broken by it. He's frustrated. He feels stupid. He's almost angry, as if it's their fault that he doesn't understand what they're talking about. The other bachrim, same age, classmates, is in that room. He's sitting with his mouth open, a little bit of spittle on his lower lip, and he's like in Gan Eden. He's completely enchanted. He doesn't understand either. But he's drawn in like a magnet. And it's, quote unquote, so interesting. Ask him what they said, he has no idea. But it was so interesting. He's not frustrated, he's not upset, he's not angry, he doesn't feel stupid. He feels charged, he feels awakened. Yet two people learned the same yeshiva, the Kibbutz Chavrusis. Why would they have such different reactions? Why would two people who are both being blown away by a level of seichel which is beyond them, one is broken by it and the other is enchanted by it? Why? Why would they have such different reactions? And there's a lot of ways to answer the question. But if you cut through all the fat, it comes down to this. There's a person who learns and a person who has a chush in learning. And on some level, it's a born trait. On another level, it's a developed trait, but on some level, it's a born trait. People are very smart to learn, and some people, they're able to get them a feel for learning. If you're very smart, and you work very hard, but you don't have a chush for learning, when you hear something you don't understand, it upsets you. Because you feel stupid. If you are a student of learning, and you work very hard, but you have a feel, so ideas that you don't understand, you also have a relationship with. It's called a chush, mseichel. And you can find this in every single field in the world. Some people have a chush. Take a person, throw him into a world which is totally foreign to him. Take a person and throw him into a world full of artists. Take a person into a room full of musicians. He's not a musician, he's not an artist. One person feels lost and stupid, and the other person feels very curious. Not because he knows, but because he has a chush. He's drawn to it like a magnet. So here is a different scenario. A person is relating to an idea that he cannot relate to. Because he's open enough, his mind is developed enough that a concept that he doesn't understand is not upsetting to him, it's open to him. It's like it's the light at the end of a tunnel almost. That he's, without understanding it, he senses it. You follow? So I just gave you two illustrations, two mushals, two examples. The first is the example of, in other words, which is a lower level. And the second is being intellectually enchanted. Okay, I don't know what the Hebrew word for it is. You're drawn into something beyond you and it raises you up rather than frustrates you. Now, let's go back to words. We understand that words are very, very important. If there's no word, there's no communication. One of the things that Hasidus teaches us about words is they don't only use words to talk to somebody else. You talk, use words to talk to yourself. You use words when you're sitting by yourself. Yeah, this morning, I sat down with a Gemara. I had exactly 15 minutes. Don't ask me why. But I sat down by a Gemara. And I found myself talking to myself. People need words to give order to their ideas. People need words to slow their ideas down. One of the things that happens when you learn how to learn is you learn how terrible a mistake it is to ever, ever, ever be in a rush. Because if you don't understand something thoroughly, not only don't you understand it, it's a hazard. It's going to interfere with all the future understandings. It's worth it to sit for a year on a daf of Gemara and get it right. Because the next daf will take half a year. And if you don't give yourself the time to understand the first piece properly, you'll never in your life understand. Because you never have the patience for it. Okay? So this is what words do. Words slow you down. They slow you down. They force you to go slowly. So there's Eis Hadibur, the spoken word. The classic model of the spoken word is you're saying it to another person. And the classic model of a spoken word that you're saying to another person is you're saying it to another person in a way that they should understand it. So you can't just say, okay, how many smart things can I put into 10 minutes? It's how do I make sure the other person gets it? I got a very big compliment the other day from somebody who I respect very much. I'm not going to say who, but the compliment was, he found me on the radio, and he's listening to me. So he says to me, you know, you repeat yourself a lot. I didn't think you did that. I said, of course, I'm a teacher. That's what teachers do. He didn't say, I repeat myself, and it's boring. I repeat myself means I want my students to understand. That's what teachers do. You always say, I'm going to say it again. You summarize, you consolidate, you want it to be clear. If you don't do that, the only person I know who never does that is the Rebbe, because he's a Rebbe, and we have to use our brains. But a teacher is supposed to bring the information to you. A teacher does three things. He comes to a class, tells you what he's going to teach off the bat. Then he explains it to you, and then he summarizes it. It's part of the process. So words help bring ideas to you. The lower level of understanding you're on, the more the words are preeminent. In other words, when you're teaching a student on a simple level, you use a lot of words to say very little. When you're teaching a student on a higher level, you say few words to say even more. And then you reach a point where you have to say things without words, in innuendo, in suggestion, in nuance, because words don't carry it. This is a little bit of an insight of the transition within our mind that is called Oisiyas HaDibur and Oisiyas HaMachshava. Words of speech are words where the words are carrying ideas, the words are carrying information, but they're carrying the ideas, they're carrying information on what we're calling a low enough level where the words are very important. The student hears the words. Through the words, he gets the idea, but the words are very... As that student's going to get smarter and higher and deeper, the words are going to become less and less the issue, and the idea is going to become more and more the issue. Machshava means you talking to yourself. When you talk to yourself, you don't have to be as elaborate, as wordy, as when you're talking to somebody else. Why? Because you understand yourself. But Oisiyas HaMachshava also means... Oisiyas HaMachshava means you're slowing your brain down to think something through. That's what Machshava is. There's a limud, there's an idea. Your chavrusa didn't show up. So you're going to be your own chavrusa, right? Whether you say it with your mouth or you're going to think it with your mind. Even if you speak, when you talk to yourself, when there's no chavrusa, those words that you say are Oisiyas HaMachshava, they're not Oisiyas HaDibur. But those words are slowing you down. Why are you slowing yourself down? Because if you don't slow yourself down, you're not going to understand. So the words of Dibur are very helpful, but very limiting. The letters of Machshava are less bringing it to a low level. They're much aided in terms of communicating ideas, but the emphasis is still on the Eisiyas HaMachshava. And then Chassidus says every layer of the Nefesh has Eisiyas. If you wanted to go, you know, the list. There's Eisiyas HaDibur, there's Eisiyas HaMachshava, there's Eisiyas of Midas. There's Eisiyas of Chitzeini Yizbin, there's Eisiyas of Pnimi Yizbin, there's Eisiyas of Chochmah, there's Eisiyas of Ratzin, there's Eisiyas of Tayin, Eisiyas of Etzem HaNefesh. This is a quotable quote from the Alter Rebbe. Another one of those special ideas which doesn't say any place in Kabbalah. It's an invention of the Alter Rebbe. And as I've shared with you over the last couple of months, those ideas in Kabbalah which the Alter Rebbe invented have a special chshivas to us. Chassidei Chabad, because it's not Kisvei Arizal in the Mountain Rebbe. One of the most important quotes Alter Rebbe says in Tanya is, quote, HaNefesh Meleya Eisiyas. The Neshama is full of words. HaNefesh Meleya Eisiyas is explained at length in the Ramat. And it means basically in your Neshama there's infinite words on infinite levels. There's an infinite collection of Eisiyas that you could speak, and separately an infinite level of words that you could think. And separately, an infinite level of words on the Madrega of Midas, and the Madrega of Chiteni has been, the Pnimi has been, the Chokh, Marotz, and Tainig, and so on. Every layer of the Neshama has its own words. And a nefesh b'lo yoseis means in etzem a nefesh, every word that could ever be said, thought, felt, understood, willed, or delighted in exists individually in the pnimius of the nefesh. And when you do one of those different things, you bring it forward. So what's the difference between a lower level of the neshama and a higher level of the neshama? Just like you understand there's a very big difference between the spoken word and the thought word. That when you speak words, the words are very important and the ideas are diminished by those words. And when you think ideas, the idea is more preeminent and the thought is more sublime, less exposed. The higher up in the nefesh you go, to use classic language, the more the eid is important and the less the eithis are important. The difference between a lower level of the neshama and a higher level of the neshama is, to use classic language, in a lower level of the neshama there's the predominance of kalim, and a higher level of the neshama there's the predominance of eid. The lowest level in this conversation is dibur, above dibur is machshav. Dibur is words you say to somebody else. Machshav means words you say to yourself, but words you say to yourself are also words. They slow you down, they structure you, they organize you, and so on. Yeah? So the Rebbe says, maybe you created the world with dibur. Hashem created a malach by speaking a word. That word is attached to an idea. The word that the Eibishter spoke to create a malach is attached to an idea. Now let's put aside the fact that he scrambled those words so the word doesn't have any idea, but let's assume it does. Eibishter creates a malach with a word that comes from an idea. In the malach, the chayis is from the word itself. The idea is hidden. The Eibishter creates a neshama from words of thought. The Eibishter creates a neshama, word of thought means just like you understand that oisiyas ha-machshava are less pronounced as oisiyas and they're more close to the oyer on the neshama's creation as a mitzias b'fnei atzmei. Stop, enough, leave it alone, it's good for the neshama. The oisiyas ha-machshava that create a neshama is closer to godliness because the oisiyas are less separate. So now let's think this through. When you speak to somebody else, you slow yourself down a lot. When you think a concept through, as opposed to speaking it, you're not going as slowly, yeah? What happens if you become a brilliant intellectual? You're a genius, you just know about. And your brain works very fast. And you have an enormous amount of knowledge. And you understand things very deeply and very quickly. Whatever you think, you're also using oisiyas. But those oisiyas, you don't even see. You're not slowing yourself down. You don't have to slow yourself down, right? When does an intellectual have to slow himself down? I know this from my own experience as a yeshiva bocher and as a young man, and I'm not a young man anymore. Learning is about understanding things clearly. And it's worth it spending a year on one page of Gemara to get it right, because that'll be the basis for a lifelong love of Torah. If you don't do that first page properly, you're never going to like the Torah, because you're never going to understand properly. You didn't even have the time. So the oisiyas hadibur are very limiting. Oisiyas hamachshava are less limiting. As you get smarter, you think faster. And it's not only that you can think faster. You pay attention. You don't need to be slowed down by the oisiyas as much. A great intellectual doesn't even see the process of slowing himself down in his exercise. He just thinks. Okay, now where am I going with this? I'll tell you where I'm going with this. Malachim are created from dibur. Neshamas are created from machshava. And you understand the difference, right? A word that is spoken, which is attached to an idea, the word and the idea are farther apart than a word which is thought that's attached to an idea, because Eisiyas HaMachshava and Oira HaMachshava are closer than Eisiyas HaDibur and Oira HaSeichel, which is why a malach is lower than a neshama. But Machshava is also limiting. But Machshava has a source. And we discussed last night in Kabbalah language, Eima Yiloh Mekanana B'Kursaya. Bina of Atzilus lives in Bria. But there's a very big difference between Bina of Atzilus living in Bria and Bria itself. You know what the difference is? Bria itself would be somebody who thinks very deliberately. Bina of Atzilus is somebody who thinks so quickly that they never even have to slow themselves down because their mind is very, very strong. You with me? Yeah? So now, you have two Madregas. You have how Bina of Atzilus comes into Bria, into Kith Yaakovet, Tachas Kith Yaakovet. Kith Yaakovet is Machshava, you think deliberately. Eimei Eloh, you think very fast. Those are two separate things, yeah? What if you're on the level of Kith Yaakovet? You're in the lower level. You have to think things through very deliberately. And you walk into a classroom, and people are thinking at supersonic speed, at the speed of Amelah, what happens to you? One being that works into that world becomes very broken and very frustrated because he doesn't understand, right? The second being works in the same environment and he's enchanted. So you're over your head. Your world is machshava, but your world is machshava. Machshava is a deliberate act. You're now in an environment where machshava happens so quickly you don't even notice the process of machshava. You're overwhelmed. One person is broken by that experience, the other neshama is not broken. What's the difference? If you have a chush. Correct? Remember? Yeah. So what is the Rebbe's words here? Look on page Reish Tav Reish Vav. Neshames, the two lines that I read last night at the end of the class. Neshames, Shegam Kemei Shebehem Bebechinas Nivra. Neshames as they were created. Now, Chevre, neshames as they were created are capable of Oisyes HaMachshava. That's their level. Oisyes HaMachshava V'Lakuz. But Leinishtanu Meyetze Mehusim did not change. This is the idea that HaLakuz Atzma Nasa Bebechinas Yesh. The bottom of Tafresh Vav. Their source, which is Bina Elah, which is the mashal of someone who's thinking very fast, shines into their level, which is thinking very deliberately. It's not revealed. You know why it's not revealed? Because neshames come from machshava. What's machshava? Deliberate, controlled thought. You're slowing your thought down to understand properly. You can't work as fast as a super machshava. But ein ze b'derech elam v'hester. That's what machshava means.
In contrast to
bina. But ein ze b'derech elam v'hester. Why not? Because if you have a chush, and in this case, when you yourself are a lakus, so a level of thought which is beyond you, which you don't really process, you cannot really internalize, you have a shayichist. And that's what these two lines are saying. I just repeated yesterday's class. In different words, obviously. So the Rebbe says, the shamis are machshava. In Briya. We're still in Briya. We haven't changed our mind. That's going to be the next year, which is tomorrow. We're going to move the neshamis up to Atzilis. But even the way neshamis is in Briya, because he's a lakus, he relates to his Shadish and Atzilis, even though he's not on the level of Atzilis. So he's not getting it, but he's not getting it.